absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to a very special edition of Absolutely Intercultural. Yes, I know. There seem to be lots of special editions of Absolutely Intercultural, so what's special about this one? The answer is that today we're going out live as a webcast. If you go to World Bridges at worldbridges.com and click on either stream one or two, is it both?
That is correct.
Then you'll hear us. So, what do we have for you tonight? Well, we have four very special guests, and we'll be discussing what effect digital technologies are having on cultural differences. We also have another request for votes. And finally, we also have news about our Frappermap competition. Do we have a winner yet? You'll have to stay tuned to find out. So, first, the polite request. We've been nominated for another award, the EduBlogs Award, and we would very much like to win. So thank you to Bea, who's here from Brazil tonight. She was one of those who nominated Absolutely Intercultural. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, well, you deserve it.
Thank you. And we've now got to the final four in the category Best Audio or Visual Blog, and we need your vote before December the 16th. And the address is www.inksub.org/awards. And that InkSub is INCSUB. So in order to win, you have to go to that web address and register your vote. So if you like what you're hearing, please go on over and vote. Right, back to tonight. I've been working a lot recently with online courses, which involve participants from different cultures, and it's really made me wonder whether we're flattening cultures into one overall internet culture, or whether, in fact, the internet and related technologies allow us to experience different cultures. So I think I'll go, first of all, to Jeff Lebo. So Jeff, can you explain to us what World Bridges is about?
World Bridges began actually as a convergence of ideas that I had while I was in grad school after having lived overseas for the first time and was discovering the internet at the same time, and thought, wow, these online technologies are really going to facilitate intercultural interaction in ways that have never occurred before. And so started envisioning a global network with a strong interest in education, but also just intercultural interaction. And as soon as I discovered audio and video and how easy that was to exchange on the internet, I kind of included that in the vision. And so World Bridges is aiming to be a global network of homegrown webcasting, but also collaborative learning, so that people from different cultures can connect, learn from each other, discover similarities and explore differences and things like that.
Helen, can we go over to you?
Yeah, ESMOS stands for Enhancing Student Mobility Through Online Support. So all sorts of exchanges and placements. We're looking at a blend of virtual and physical mobility, hence my interest in online collaboration and communication particularly, and also looking at various different technologies that we can use to support mobility students across cultures, so everything from blogging to SMS, MMS. But I'm particularly interested in collaboration dynamics online and what happens when we all share terminology, speaking English in one sense, but the fact that really we all have very different Englishes according to our own cultural backgrounds and underlying mental constructs and connotations. And I'm interested in that sort of grey area, really. How do we negotiate our cross-cultural semantics?
I think you found that even though we all speak English, that sometimes we don't all mean the same thing when we use the same word.
Exactly.
So and next, I'd like Barbara Dew from Brazil to introduce herself. Barbara, you use weblogs with your students. Now, why do you do that, Bea?
Well, I have been teaching English as a foreign language here in Brazil at the Franco-Brazilian School. And I also come from a very intercultural or very mixed cultural background because my parents are Polish, my husband is Belgian, I have sisters-in-law who speak German, Italian, and so on. And Brazil is also a very, an absolutely intercultural country in that you have many immigrants and many different nationalities represented here. When I started blogging with the kids, it was mostly for them to obviously practice their English, but also collaborate and participate in conversations with other students around the world. We started in 97, publishing articles and taking part in collaborative projects, international collaborative projects with countries around the world. Because this is very important for them to acquire this dimension, different perspectives, and so on. And a year ago, we opened our project, dekita.org, which aims to bring together all these blogs from all over the world so kids and teachers find them more easily than just navigating on the net.
And and B there is talking about high school students, not university students.
Yeah, so these are secondary high school.
Yeah. Our final guest, but not least, is Carsten, my good pod producer in Germany. And Carsten, you spent some time in Sweden, and there you met Web2 culture full on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That is true. I first got in contact with the Web 2.0 technologies and the whole culture behind it when I was in Sweden, when I was doing my internship at the University of Umeå, which is in the very north of Sweden. And when I went there, I was thinking, I want to have something where I could post little pictures and where I could write texts about what I'm doing here. But I had no ideas of weblogs or podcasts or anything at that point. So I was basically just using a kind of a content management system to do that, to write text and to publish pictures. And one day I was sitting in a computer room in the university in Sweden, and somebody said, "Hey, you've got a nice blog." And I was looking over my shoulder and said, what is a blog? I have no idea what you mean. And this was actually my initiation, so to speak, to the whole Web 2.0 experience, because after that I met a whole lot of people who were blogging, who were doing research about blogs, who were looking at it from a scientific angle. And I was invited to a blog walk, which is kind of a grassroots approach to getting to know people who are basically interested in Web 2.0 technology. And I met Howard Weingold in Umeå.
Is the internet making us all Americans? Perhaps Jeff will have the first go at that one.
I don't know. I think in ways I'm probably the least able to answer that because I'm looking at it from the inside. I don't know if I can recognize the Americanization process as readily as someone from the outside. I think in general, global culture is being Americanized, which is not a good thing. Although I think in ways the internet can facilitate the preservation of subcultures or possibly the creation of new subcultures. I know, for example, Korea, which has a very active non-English speaking internet community, has really developed their own culture in a lot of ways. And they don't use MySpace, they use Cyworld and have kind of their own methods of interaction and have avoided a lot of, I think, what other perhaps Western countries have been affected by more.
Maybe it's the fact that we're speaking English that means that we feel overwhelmed by the American way of doing things. But I don't know. Helen, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think that obviously the internet gives us the opportunity to work across cultural boundaries, as it were, and across boundaries of time and space. And the overriding feeling that I get is that it's actually enabling an increased awareness of other cultures. And I definitely find that, you know, when I'm communicating with partners in various different European countries, the way that they express themselves is still very tied to their national culture. But again, I mean, I find the whole notion of culture itself is sort of changing. I think now we've got so many sort of multiple identities and digital identities you know, the generational culture, the national culture. So once again, I find it all quite messy, really. You know, there are lots of accusations of cultural imperialism on the net. That's kind of inevitable, really, with a powerful language, with a language that's replacing or, you know, being chosen to be adopted over other languages. But, I mean, as I say, my standpoint in terms of the language issue especially is that just because we're using the same words doesn't mean that we mean the same things.
Maybe I can ask B about this, because B, you're blogging in English. You also operate in French, and I guess you must also operate in Portuguese.
In Portuguese,
are there different flavors to the different language internets?
Oh, yes. I think they are very different in their content, in the way they relate different things, obviously, according to their context. But it's true that because the internet started in English and it's being developed mostly in English-speaking countries, this has an enormous impact on the countries who do not speak the language. So I am very much aware, for instance, that when I first started in 97, there was almost nothing here. Nothing was going on much in France that I could find. So I turned to, obviously, America and the countries that were developing it to find models and to find things to do. And I must say that I stayed a bit too long there, because I went totally out of my country. It gave me the possibility to reach out, but I also lost a little bit of contact with my own country and Portuguese. And now I'm coming back now, and I'm contacting people here in Brazil, and they are doing wonderful work in Portuguese, but there is the language barrier, definitely, because many do not speak English. So there are many, lots of good things happening here, but nobody gets to know about them because they are not in English.
I wonder if I could ask Carsten, there's this thing which amuses me no end, which is that when they speak in German, that they're very formal, and then when they go over to English, it's all these first name terms. And I'm wondering, Carsten, I mean, does this make you feel uncomfortable?
It happens easily for me, because maybe I got used to it, but I remember the first time when I had that feeling, when I was talking to a teacher, and I was using the very official form, like Dr. Borgmann, so I was calling him with his title and his last name, and then when I was using English, when I was speaking English, I called him Lawrence. So I called him by his first name. But after a while, that became natural. So I really got used to it. And I'd even say I don't recognize it very much now when I'm switching names or forms.
So you're quite used to it.
Yes, I got used to it, definitely. But so I bet the language definitely has an influence on how the internet too has developed.
I'll ask Jeff about the World Bridges Tibet. And I'm just wondering, this issue about, are there some cultures which will never be heard, no matter how cheap or ubiquitous the internet becomes? But obviously, the voice of Tibet is there, but what sort of voice is it?
Well, I think Tibet's a fairly unique case, because there is so much interest from outside of Tibet in preserving the culture, which has certainly been attacked within the geography of Tibet. But there, as of 10 years ago, there was very little. I've been working with the community and others as well, and there is a significant Tibetan web presence. What I've helped facilitate in the last couple of months is this kind of live interactive discussion. And I said, you know, because there is a Tibetan diaspora, and they're scattered more and more to a variety of countries, and it can be much harder to maintain their cultural integrity and just the sense of belonging when you're, you know, 200 Tibetans in a city of 4 million. And so these conversations allow them to stay in touch and discuss things that are happening. And it's really gained some traction, because I think a lot of these people who are scattered about, it's easy to kind of lose touch with their home culture. And for many, actually, the people who are having the discussion are not people who grew up in Tibet. They're people who grew up in exile, mostly in India or Nepal. And so this is the technology, I think, is facilitating the preservation or the vibrancy of the culture. It's interesting you mentioned language. The topic this past weekend was homosexuality in the Tibetan mm-hmm. community. And the shows are usually in Tibetan. Most are very bilingual, but they were just more comfortable speaking in Tibetan. But as soon as the matters turned to more sexual things, the conversation kept slipping into English. And then when it would get more away from the explicit sexual content, it would go back to Tibetan.
And is that because the words aren't there in Tibetan for the concepts? Or?
Well, I asked someone, and I think that's part of it, and it's also similar to Korea, where I lived, and there's not the vocabulary for mm-hmm. it in some situations, but I think also there was just a comfort level that in English, they're used to hearing this stuff in English, but to actually address it in Tibetan with using honorifics and everything else just feels very awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Does this mean that there are two Tibetan cultures? There's the diaspora culture and there's the Tibetan culture in Tibet itself?
Probably more than two. I mean, because you have the Tibetan culture within Tibet, you have the exile culture within India and Nepal, and there's considerable diversity there as well. And now you have sort of the diaspora culture from people who've grown up in exile but are now living in the West generally.
Yeah, I think the internet does increase the likelihood of people developing skills in sort of mobility across cultures, and not in the nationalistic sense, but as you say, maybe three or four Tibetan cultures, but a average Tibetan speaker can potentially move across those cultures subconsciously very easily.
Right.
And I think the internet allows us to do that.
Are you aware of the national cultures coming through in your online work?
Yeah, definitely. Very much so. Something that I find very interesting is that with, for instance, my project partners, we're from six different countries, I find it interesting that when we're using asynchronous communication, such as email, that our nationalistic cultural way of expressing ourselves is a lot more evident than when we're using Skype for sort of a real-time text chat. I think it becomes a lot more almost colloquial. There's more use of emoticons. It's a lot more rushed. It's not as measured. And so I find that when we're communicating synchronously, our cultural differences are less obvious than they are in asynchronous email communication, which is interesting.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yeah, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Barbara, when your students are getting in touch with these people all over the world, do they have a sense that there are cultural differences, or are they more aware of things that are bringing them together?
I think that obviously they are aware because there are things like names. So they got in contact with people from Thailand, or they got with people from Japan. And so the first thing is the name that is completely different. They can't make out whether it's a boy or a girl. Then mm-hmm. there is the way they express themselves, as Helen was saying. So each culture writes or express, they express themselves in different ways, in different structures. And I had some very funny comments, and this is one of the interesting things in class. When you receive posts or you read posts from other countries, it's like students reacting. I think it was to a post from Pakistan and saying, "Oh, teacher," because they call me teacher. This is something very mm-hmm. Brazilian. It's not, they don't call me Mrs. or Barbara or Mrs. Jo. It's always teacher. For all, any English teacher is teacher. But I had students who sort of commented, why do you expose us to people who do not speak English well? And I said, what do you mean about they do not speak English well? You don't understand what they're saying? I said, but they write in a completely different way. And I said, yeah, well, but what says that they are not making the same comment, about what you are writing? What? Who tells you that your English is the correct one, right? So it's mostly about the language, I think. And, well, they get surprised about ways of life and perspectives and We discussed a lot. We had sometimes discussions on peace matters and how do you see nature preservation. So we participated in projects like that. And but I think you only really notice the particularities when you work more closely on a more sustained level, not when you just do temporary exchanges. Right, they're all excited about it, but they notice these superficial things. But for me, I notice people writing differently and reacting differently according to their particular culture. So it's interesting to notice this.
These differences can very easily cause irritation. Do you think, do you have a feeling? I've experienced it myself in some of my students. And do you think that your students, are they able to come to some sort of reconciliation of accepting these differences? Do they get to that stage?
I think that yes, they have to in a certain way. They are also, let's say, intercultural. Many of my students are not 100% Brazilian, so they are very much aware of this difference. And we have, as it is a bilingual school, and we don't, it's an international school really, we don't have only Brazilians, but we have Brazilians and Franco-Brazilians and just French and then Lebanese and people from and of Jewish origin. So there are differences, and I think it's interesting how they react, because English for them at school is safe ground. I think the fight here in cultures is Brazilian and French, because these are the two imposed languages. So English for them is safe ground. It's funny, but it's like that.
And now for a final reminder about our competition, let's go to Carsten.
Well, I'm afraid there's no winner so far. Surprisingly enough, there's still the chance to win a free trip to Germany. And when I say free, I really mean free. You can win a flight. You can win a night in a hotel, and you can become the guest host of one of our next shows of Absolutely Intercultural. The only thing you have to do is go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, go to the posting for show number 19, and put your pin on our Flipper map. You can read in the posting for show number 19 what we would like you to do. And if your pin is number 100 on our Flipper map, we will invite you to Germany. So please go to our blog and take your chance.
Thank you, Carsten. Don't forget to vote for us at the EduBlog Awards. And the next show will be going out on December 29th from Germany. See you then, and don't forget, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.